You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. I'm Travis Brown, and on this week's episode, we're going to do a little equestrian riding. We're going to talk to Casey Fisher and Alex Desidero of the Texas A&M equestrian team, the national champion Fighting Texas Aggie equestrian team. We're also going to get into a little baseball and softball talk and scattershoot a little bit on logos and walk-up songs and kind of the peripherals of the diamond sport. So, without further ado, the man, the myth, the legend, the horse whisperer, Zach Taylor.
We're just going to cover it all today, baby. And since you can't pronounce Alex's name, we'll just call her the champ.
Yeah.
How about that?
The
Alex
champ
the
is
champ.
Here.
Alex Desidero is from Jersey, and we'll talk with her in just a little bit. And Travis, for some reason, just hates people from Jersey, and he hates trying to pronounce their last name.
I just am real bad at it.
We should have asked her if it's Italian.
Italian?
Is that an
Italian
last name? Are you from Italy?
Yeah, so...
You go to Olive Garden a lot?
God.
Well, ain't no Olive Garden. Anyways, we're saying that now that we're not actually talking to her face-to-face, so
uh-huh.
We know she won't beat us up, but... But yeah, we'll get to visit with Casey and Alex here in a little bit and
learn something new about the sport of equestrian.
Yeah. Learn a little bit something new, as well as talking Aggie baseball and softball. Hopefully we'll have one Colin Deaver in studio. Talk a little bit about that. We'll see.
You know, he kind of resembles a couple members of the A&M softball team. You know, I was watching their Aggie Sports Overtime show and, you know. Seems like they kind of look alike.
So friends of the program, Colin Deaver and Matt Trent, they were covering Aggie softball's series against Arkansas last weekend in Fayetteville. The only problem is no one in Fayetteville was covering it. So generally what they do in TV land, at least from what I gather, is that neighboring stations, say the NBC affiliate up in Fayetteville, would send video and audio to Colin and Matt down here. But that wasn't the case because nobody was covering it. So mm-hmm. They had to improvise a little bit.
Yeah.
And hilarity did ensue.
Yeah, they basically reenacted the entire game, and it was glorious. So go check out Colin's Twitter. I'm sure we'll get into that with him in a little bit when he gets in here. But speaking of peripherals of diamond sports, I know you put out a tweet the other day, a little Twitter poll.
It was a hot tweet.
It was a hot tweet. Asking
12 people
for,
voted on it.
12, good. Asking for, what is the best sports logo?
Or I guess you could say most iconic, but I kind of like best, even though that's not always going to be so cut and dried, because people will think, oh, well, this is more pleasing to the eye than the other. It's objectionable.
You're looking a little bit more at, like, brand recognition,
right,
more so
than
artistic ability.
And this has to do with sports logos. I didn't put the Nike swoosh in there because it wasn't a team. It was more or a person. Mm-hmm. It was an outfitter. So, I mean, Nike and Adidas, I think Nike would have to be one of the top, if not the top.
You're not about that three-stripe life?
Yeah, with the Adidas. But I basically did like sports teams.
Sure.
What's
so
the
what,
my,
what is
most
the,
iconic
you threw
logo?
Four up there.
Mm-hmm. I did the Texas Longhorns Longhorn, which, you know, love them or hate them, it's one of the most iconic, I think, in sports. I also did Greg Norman Shark. I don't know if it's my most iconic. It probably isn't. I don't think a lot of people could look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's Greg Norman's apparel. I just think it's cool. I think it's a cool
logo.
Well,
that then totally defeats the whole setup.
Why?
Because you said this is about being the most iconic, and that is aesthetically
well,
pleasing.
Well, if
you
notice in here, I gave you four options because Twitter has yet, we can do all sorts of things. We can come up with roving satellites to pick up your vehicle and figure out if you have a overdue parking ticket to tow you in the middle of the night. But we cannot
sounds
figure
like,
out.
Sounds like something
Twitter,
you might be familiar
Twitter
with.
Twitter cannot figure out how to give you more than four options in a poll. But I included Greg Norman just because I think it's a cool one. The Dallas Cowboys star and the New York Yankees NY.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of other iconic logos out there in sports. And I also opened this up for discussion. I was more than happy to get some feedback. Nobody really gave it to me. Folks voted in the poll, but nobody mentioned any other ones. Are there any other ones that come to your mind?
Iconic logos.
I would say the Green Bay Packers are one.
Yeah.
Everybody sees the G. They know what that is.
Right. Or Georgia.
Or Georgia. Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
You know,
I'm talking about world renown. Like, if you went to Indonesia, people would know.
Okay, that
what this
also
is.
depends on the sport a little bit. I think you might, if you're just looking at the sports, probably the Detroit Red Wings. It's a very
I would argue that would be tops in hockey. Or the Rangers.
Well, no, before the Rangers, the Blackhawks.
The Blackhawks.
That is one of the best sports logos, in my opinion, is the Blackhawks logo.
So maybe we can change it from iconic to the ones that we think are the best. Like, okay. We think those are the coolest.
Well, that completely changed it, because I think the Dallas Cowboys star then drops, like, to the bottom, because it's just
what?
A star.
Dude, keep it simple, stupid. That's what I love. No, I mean, it's a force of phrase. I'm not necessarily calling you stupid in this case.
Well, thanks, man.
Well, you were just looking at me like you thought I was calling you stupid, and I didn't want you to think that.
Sure.
At least not this time.
Jerk.
I'm just saying, if you're talking about what we think are cool logos, oh, look who's here. Look who decided to come in when Colin Deaver, by the way, he's rocking the Adidas logo.
He is. That was just such great timing into this discussion.
Yeah, it was like he just
like
knew
he,
what we were
like
talking about.
We planned for him to just walk right in at that time.
So Colin, you're new to this particular subject at this particular time.
I literally
because
have no idea what we're
you
talking
just
about.
Walked
I
through
promise,
the door. We're talking about, let's take away iconic away from it. Let's just go with best. What do we think are the best sports logos? And it's not apparel. You can't do an apparel like Nike or Adidas or Reebok. We're just talking about team logos in general. What do we think are the best logos out there?
You're asking my opinion right now.
And I was telling Travis, and Travis doesn't like some because he thinks, like the Dallas Cowboys star, he thinks is too simplistic, or you just don't think it's very appealing?
A little bit of both. I mean, okay. I think it's iconic. I think it's one of the probably most recognized sports
logos
around the world.
Because people see it and they know what it is.
But it's very simplistic.
But like, see, to me, the two kind of go hand in hand. I think your best logo... I like simple stuff. I don't like it being just chocked full of all sorts of crazy things. And like the Milwaukee Brewers logo, it's a cool logo, but there's too much going on in there. I think
I kind of see that as like the Atlanta Hawks logo, the one that they're using now slash the retro one. Because I always thought I never actually saw the hawk head in it up until about last year. I thought it was like some kind of weird reverse Pac-Man thing.
Yeah.
Are we only doing like current logos?
No.
Because yeah. I would say, I mean, we're looking at the Golden State Warriors right now is definitely one of my favorites.
You don't think it's too busy?
No,
with the,
I think
with
it's
the
great.
Bridge and
no,
everything else.
No, I think
else?
That's great. It shows obviously where the team is. It just shows that they're connected with the city. I really like that.
Which city though? Oakland or San Francisco? The Golden Gate Bridge goes between
both of them,
brah.
I mean, the team is in Oakland.
They are a team without a home, and most of the people. I tell you what, of course, I'm not a big basketball guy to begin with, and it's not like I cover the NBA a lot. It's not like I cover Golden State a whole heck of a lot. I did not know where Golden State was. I swear I did not know what city they were in until about 4 or 5 years ago when they started getting good.
That's on you.
Well, I'm just saying people don't know where it's at.
Well, they know
that's part of the logo.
It says, yeah, exactly. Maybe that's the bridge on there because layman, does not know.
A lot of people don't know that California's nickname is the Golden State.
Who doesn't know that?
People not from California. I'm just telling you. If I go to East Texas and
I was about
I show
to say,
this,
your East Texas is
if,
showing.
If I go to East Texas and I show this to my neighbors, they're going to be like, I don't know what tarnation that is. What kind of logo? I got some kind of yellow bridge up there.
If we're talking, all right, let's keep it in the state of Texas. And this is not going to be a popular opinion in front of two Rangers fans. I really like the Astros logo. As far as
which one? The new one.
The new one. The old one. The old red with the red colors. Those are terrible. But the new logo with the orange star and the A. I love that logo.
I won't. That's a good logo. I won't get down on you on that one.
I like old school. I like Rice's logo.
Yeah.
With the old English R. Same thing with the Detroit Tigers. I love that. I think that is awesome looking.
How about this? The Raptors, Toronto Raptors logo. It's just a basketball, but instead of like a hand holding the basketball, it's got the Raptors claws.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I don't know.
But it doesn't have anything to do with Toronto. Why? Basically. Also, I'm going to be biased here. The Oregon O is just iconic.
Yeah, I mean, if you saw...
And the U, Miami U.
If you saw the U, the Miami U, the Texas Longhorn, we were talking about that earlier. I think that's one of the best logos out there because it's easy, it's simple. You stick it on a helmet, you stick it on anything, people know what it is.
I think I'm still going to stick to, if we're like picking our favorites, I'm still going to stick to the Blackhawks.
I really like the Detroit Red Wings because they tie in the tire. I think that's pretty cool. I don't know what a Red Wing is. Is it some kind of bird?
Their boots?
Yeah, they're the boots. The Miami U, yeah, that's great. Boston with the B, I guess. I don't know. The L.A. Lakers, look, the L.A. Lakers are a storied franchise. All the championships in the world. Well, not all of them, obviously, but they have quite a few. But it just, to me, because the team moved, they were originally called the Lakers because they were in Minnesota. Right?
Correct.
Right. And then they moved to L.A. Are there a lot of lakes in L.A.?
I mean.
At least with the Dallas Cowboys.
There's a really, really big lake. It's called the Pacific Ocean.
At least with the Dallas Cowboys, there are cowboys in Texas. Is Los Angeles known for their lakes? The same thing with the Utah Jazz. I wish the Utah Jazz had changed their name when they moved from New Orleans.
There's been some talk of that, of like the Pelicans. Well, back when they were like the, back when the Charlotte Bobcats were still the Bobcats, New Orleans was still the Hornets, and the Utah was the Jazz. There was talk of a 3-team trade to make New Orleans the Jazz, Utah the Bobcats, and Charlotte the Hornets again, which would make a lot of sense because where do Bobcats live? Hello, Utah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of them that live in Utah. I don't know about a lot of Hornets living in Charlotte. But we're kind of.
Although Utah is the Beehive State, so that would actually make sense for them to be the Hornets, too.
Yeah. This is true. So we're going off the rails here a little bit, but just looking overall, the Yankees, I think, is one of the best logos out there.
It's pretty clean, yeah.
That's what I like.
The Canadiens, like, number two, the Canadiens is pretty good, too.
Other than they don't know how to spell Canadiens. They spell it funny.
Well, you know what the...
With an IE?
You know what? There's an H in there. Because it's really the... Habitations.
Habits? I don't know.
It's inhabitants.
It's Canada. They don't
That's
count.
That's why they call them Habs, right?
Yep. Notre Dame. Notre Dame is quite iconic. I don't know. Overall, you just got to talk about what you think are the best logos. I think Texas has one of the best logos out there. I think that the Raiders...
Yeah.
I think the Raiders have a really cool logo, too.
The Broncos, not so much now, but the Broncos' old logo with the bucking horse, that was fire.
Yeah.
If we want to bring up, you know, the Astros, I want to talk about the best Rangers logo was the Texas with the baseball on top of it and the Rangers in the script writing.
The old, like the 80s
yeah.
logo?
Yeah, or... The diamond one with the star in the middle that looks like the Texas Ranger badge. The one they have now is gross.
Now, if we want to go throughout the funniest, of course, we could always go to minor league baseball because there's plenty of good ones in there. But we're talking about more the iconic logos, so to speak.
Why don't we do a real quick about face here? Because I know there's something else in this periphery of athletics that we wanted to get to. And that is... walk-up songs.
You just did a complete...
I know.
That was a humongous segue within the span of five seconds.
The transition was pretty
solid. Is that
your
way of telling me to shut up, Travis? I think that was a Zach needs to shut up, we're going on to something else
moment. Well, how much... This has been a long segue already about scatter shooting about logos.
It was going to take a while.
And we brought Colin in and everything. So talk about walk-up songs. I have a little story coming out here in the next couple days, or it's already out, depending on when you're listening to this. And the interesting point, the lead, looking at Texas A&M softball first baseman Tori Vidalis and the fact that she has what I predict will be the newest phenomenon in college athletics, that is the custom walk-up song. She had a DJ friend. She mixed two Bryson Tiller songs together. He added like a storm siren on top of it. It is a custom walk-up song. I think that's pretty interesting. But also, if you look at the other side, at the baseball side of things, the softball players, they pretty much pick a walk-up song, and they stick with it. They ride it out through the season. Baseball, that's a whole other story. 7 out of the 12 guys who have received the most starts this year have already changed their walk-up song once.
Well,
3 of those have changed it twice.
You have to keep in mind, too, that softball has been doing very well all season long at 37-4, whereas baseball was suffering some setbacks early on in the year. So obviously, if you're doing bad, it's because of the walk-up song. So you got to change that. I mean, you can't just stick with the same one and expect to suddenly be able to rip out base hits.
I was talking to Rick Hill, the voice of the Aggies out there at Bluebell Park, and he said he was talking to a player about walk-up songs and whatever, and I can't remember which player it was, but one of them said, you know, it's not the arrow, it's the Indian.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's keeping it simplistic, I guess. Believe it or not, it actually is on your talent and not what song you're listening to. So
thanks for the explanation.
Yeah, there you go. Just breaking it down psychologically.
What's the best walk-up song out there right now?
Talking about from Aggie Sports or what would be my personal walk-up song? Because I don't know what all these guys are playing. It definitely wouldn't be Brantley Gilbert. That's for dang sure.
Hey, you leave Austin Holman out of this.
Man, right? Holman.
You leave Austin Holman out of this.
Kopensky had Brantley Gilbert for a long time. I
personally enjoy Braden Shoemaker's.
Yeah.
Because I'm a rider. Yeah.
Yeah, you would.
Soul survivor.
Right,
it wouldn't be a podcast with Colin Lissy
without
saying,
without karaoke time, yeah. From Colin Deaver, worse than Gabe Bach. It's if I was looking at my own, can we talk about our own personal ones?
Sure.
What I would have, I'm really stuck on a song, and I know it's an old one. The first time though I ever heard it, because this is how off the beaten path I am when it comes to music. I don't listen to what you kids listen to these days, but Grace Potter and the Nocturnals, they played a song at one of the baseball games. And I got to listening, and I was like, man, this is a really cool song. It's The Lion, the Beast, and the Beat.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's a really cool song. And so I've been stuck on that song, and I'm thinking, if I was like a closer coming in to put out the fire with the bases loaded and no outs in the bottom of the ninth, this would be a cool song to come
up with. So that was the intro video song for the Stars playoffs 2 years ago.
Was it really?
Yeah, they started with... like when they lowered the star they skate out of down and they did some stuff. They started with the Muse, I think it's like Uprising, and then it shifted into that song. And yeah, there you go. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Colin, what would yours be?
I love so many different kinds of music, and it's really, really tough to just, you know, pick a song. I would probably honestly be, you know, Boomer White had like 3 walk-up songs last year. I'd probably be one of those guys.
They would change it from week to week?
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter how good you were doing.
I don't know how about week to week, but I just, it's, it would be for sure a hip-hop song. I can't think
of it. You'd have an Incubus song.
Yeah. There's just, I probably would.
Which one?
Probably like Nice to Know You or something.
Yeah.
But that one, like, you have to like lead into that too. That'd be a good, like,
it would just be one of those that would take a while to finally.
Yeah, that's a good one for a closer to run out to. I would have to throw out some old hip hop probably.
Thank goodness you're not one of these baseball players. Can you imagine Rick having to just go through the whole list that Colin's gonna have?
I mean, now they have a couple guys that have Friday, Tuesday, Saturday, Friday, Sunday. 2 different songs. One's Tuesday, Saturday. One's Friday, Sunday.
Keeping it fresh.
Yeah, keeping it fresh.
Or at least keeping it to where it's not repeating itself.
I mean, I'd probably have to have a couple, and my taste in music has definitely drastically changed since my baseball playing days. But at least back in my baseball playing days, and I'd probably stick to this a little bit.
Johnny Cash, God's Gonna Cut You Down.
No, no, but that's
a little cliche almost, but it's still a great song.
That is my ringtone on my phone. But no, so Pat Green did a cover of a song called, I think it's like a Sheryl Crow song or something, but it's called Can't Find My Way Home. And it has this really cool violin intro.
That's how you get pumped, is to a violin?
I'll play it for you after we get off the air here.
By the way, Joe Cocker also had one.
Look it up. It's good on something. So anyway, I think we've probably gone way over the allotted time for this, you know, scatter shooting segment. But next, we're going to move into the world of equestrian and get to know a little bit more about that sport and the national championship that the Texas Aggies just won. That's next on the My Aggie Nation podcast. Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. I'm Travis Brown here with Zach Taylor. Zach, I have a question for you. You consider yourself a sports guy, right? I mean, your Facebook, your professional Facebook page is Zach Taylor Sports Guy. You're a sports guy, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
think
so do me a favor. Explain equestrian to me.
Equestrian is the...
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, we have two national champion Texas A&M equestrian riders here to help not only explain to us equestrian, because we're kind of idiots in that sense, but to talk a little bit about their national championship. We have Casey Fisher and Alex Desidero here, both national champions, like we said. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
So, real simple question. It should just take, you know, a brief second to answer. What's equestrian?
Well, I can start it off for the hunt seat side. It's you have two different categories. You have flat and then you have jumping. And what happens is when you go to nationals, it's two neutral, or it's one neutral horse and a neutral playing field, and you draw your opponent and you both ride the same horse, and whoever gets the higher score wins the point for the team. And same as it goes on flat. However, when you come to school learning flat, it's a whole new like ball game. You've never done this before. I mean, it's about all maneuvers, but before school we do the maneuvers outside of the outside of a box, but when you come to school you have to do them inside of a box, which is a completely new ball game for us. And same thing, you draw a horse, you draw an opponent, whoever gets a higher score wins a point for the team.
Yeah, so Western's very similar on like the format. So you're on a neutral horse riding against an opponent and the higher score wins. We have two events, horsemanship and reining, and those are two events that we do like before we come to school. So we've competed in both of those events before. I'm on the horsemanship team, so we have a new pattern for each meet or each round at nationals. And we're judged on how we execute those maneuvers on the horse and like body position. And reining, they have like a set pattern that they like their maneuvers are very similar through each pattern, and it's more judged on kind of the horse's ability and like executing those maneuvers on that horse, not judged a whole lot on body position like horsemanship is.
So I know it's got to be probably self-explanatory, but the difference between hunter seat and Western is the saddle, correct?
Yes, the saddle and like the attire that we wear. They'll have an English saddle, kind of the things you'd see more at the Olympics. Western, we have a Western saddle, Western cowboy hat, you'd say, and kind of like different style of horses as well.
Did you look that up last night?
I had horses. Did I not tell you that?
No.
I had horses.
Okay. So how did y'all get into equestrian and stuff like that? I mean, it, you know, doesn't seem like maybe your most typical of sports to start out with as a kid.
Ever since I was a little kid, I started in equestrian. Both my parents are trainers, along with my oldest brother, Michael. And, I mean, it's just something that we do as a family. So that's how I kind of got into it.
Yeah, mine's very similar. My dad is a horse trainer and a judge as well. So I just was born into it. They never really pressured me into having to ride, so I kind of got to make that decision on my own. I'd say a lot of the girls, there's a few with trainer parents, but a lot of them are just exposed to it at a young age, and a lot of their parents may have ridden when they were younger too. So
you went to national championship, you won it this past weekend. Walk us through a little bit of kind of what happened there and the maybe the Reader's Digest version of the national championship.
Well, you know, we were going in fifth seed, which I took it as an advantage. It was great. You know, you get to start off day one, you get to go out strong, you know, get your nerves out. And we won that meet, and then we go on to day two, and, you know, we knew it was going to be hard. You know, they're very strong. And we went out and we killed it again. And then obviously Saturday came along and we started off against TCU. And what happened was like, it was just amazing. We never thought that would happen, but it just was a really good confidence booster going into the final round. And then obviously the final round, it was great. And knowing going into fences that we already won it was like, it was just a good, like, feeling. So, I don't know. It's amazing.
Yeah, and with that, like, we competed in 64 points over the whole weekend, and we only lost 8. And, like, I think that they've been looking into that. Like, is that the best performance anyone's ever had at Nationals? We allowed 2 points the first day, 1 point the second day, and then we swept TCU in the semis, which it just like really our just momentum just kept going and going. And then we lost 5 points to Georgia in the finals. So it was just like an amazing weekend.
One thing I like just want to bounce off of that is, you know, it's very easy to get have Western on a good day and have Huntsie on a good day. But the fact that we came together as a whole team and every single day we came out so consistent as a whole entire team. So Western and Huntsie, you know, they were just on their game. And that's really what pulled it through the entire time.
Now, one thing, Casey, I know you're from Abilene, but Alex, you ain't from around here. You're from up in Jersey. I know there's quite a few of you guys that are from other states. So what's the big draw to come to A&M, other than the facilities? This is the first time I've ever been here, and this is amazing. But other than that, what's the big draw to come here?
You know, the biggest draw about coming here is when I came, I just felt the family like just – the entire team, you're on. It's a big family, and they're always on your back, and they always have your back. And you know, it's just when I visited, I don't know how to explain it. It's really unexplanatory, but everyone is just so into A&M, and that was one big thing for me. And along with the facility, like you already said, that was something just a plus on top of it. So I don't know. And as a hunt seat rider, you know, we. Not a lot of us are from Texas, so like you'll get a lot of us from like Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, and I thought it was a far way to come to Texas, but I don't know, I just fell in love with the school.
I know I have a couple friends that are from New Jersey, and most of the time when you mention anything associated related to the state of Texas, you kind of get an eye roll. Did being involved in the sport of equestrian kind of help maybe ease that culture shock a little bit?
For sure it has.
One thing that I was going to ask, do you guys bring your own horses down with you? Is that how that works? Or does A&M already have a stock of horses that you guys use?
So coming to school, we do not bring our own horses. Okay. It's like the whole competition is seeing how well you can adapt to a horse. So it's called catch riding, we call it. So like even if you just do super good like in your high school days and you have a really nice horse and you do really well on that horse, it's not really guaranteed that you're going to be a great rider here at A&M because you have a 4-minute warm-up on a horse that most likely you've never ridden before.
Yeah.
And then you have to go compete and you really have to adapt to different types of horses and like, hey, you might can get a big score on this one horse, but you're just barely trying to get an average score on one horse and that's going to win your point.
4-minute warm-up on a horse you've never ridden before. That kind of sounds like the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So plus horses have their own personalities. I mean, they're very personality-driven. So it's kind of like if you don't know a horse that well, then you have to break in pretty quickly.
Zach Taylor,
just letting you know.
The horse expert.
The horse whisperer.
So obviously, I'm sure it was just thrilling, but kind of walk through those minutes right after y'all won, and what has it been like coming back here as national champions?
I will say it was kind of hard because being on the hunt seat side, we already knew we won, and we still had to go in and show, and we needed to do fences. And, you know, it was a great feeling that we already won, but we still needed to focus. You know, Caroline was just like, you know, guys, you need to go out there and you need to get some more points on the board. I know we won, but we want to still go in there and ride our butts off and get points on the board. So we did. We came out with 2 points. Georgia came out with 2 points to just up our score a little more, which was great. And it was really good that our senior, Haley Webster, won her last point. So that was a good thing for her. So, yeah.
Yeah, over on the Western side, everybody was kind of migrating over to the fences ring, and we were just, like, crying and jumping around like we couldn't believe it still. And we knew that they still had to go compete, but we were just, like, on cloud nine because we already won, but we still went and supported them. And so it was awesome.
I will say it was definitely hard to keep the tears in, but we really like I said we needed to focus, and it was definitely one of the hardest things we had to do.
For those who might not have ever come out here to watch y'all ride or anything like that, what's your case for coming out and being a fan of equestrian? What's exciting? Why kind of maybe make your case for picking up a few new fans here?
Yeah, I've seen people come out, you know, they'd never have seen this before, seen our format, maybe they've seen some horse events, or maybe they've seen none at all, and they, like, really find it interesting, and I'll have, like, maybe some family friends that bring another friend out, and they'll be so into it. Like, they're like, oh, we're down by 2 points. We got to go get these other 2 points. I'm like, what? Like, how do you even know what's going on? But they really catch on. And, like, a lot of our parents are in the stands. So they ask them questions like, wait, how does this work? And, like, what are they being judged on? And I feel like they just find it really interesting because it's something new. And it is, like, still, like, thrill-seeking, I think. Like when they watch us, they're like, oh, my gosh, what's the score going to be? That judge, like, he's not judging very well today, or he's not, like, liking them. Are we going to get this last point? And so I find, like, a lot of people find it awesome, and they keep coming out. You know, it's a free to get in, so just come out whenever you can.
What is your case for the equestrian?
You know, like she said, I know a lot of people that I've like, I was like, guys, you got to come watch this. You know, it's different. You know, it's nothing you've seen before. And for example, this past weekend, my parents brought one of our girls from home and she's never seen this. And she was like, you know, she got into it. She was like, oh, you need this. Oh, we won. Oh, you need this many more points to win. And like, it's just cool because it's a completely different feeling. And, you know, you're not just competing for yourself. You're not just going in and competing once. You know, you want to just compete again. So it's, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. It's one of the coolest things ever. I don't know how to explain it, but it's cool. Yeah.
Now, from here on out, what does y'all's schedule look like? Obviously, the school year is still going on. But throughout the summer, do you guys still compete? What's it look like there?
You know, throughout the summer, I go home and I travel all over New York, Tryon, North Carolina, whatnot. And yeah, I compete on my own horses, so it's kind of fun.
Yeah, so we don't have any team obligations over the summer. Technically, we're done right now. We have a couple banquets to go to end like the athletic season, but we'll come back about a week before classes start and start practice and all the intro stuff for the new freshmen, and just kind of have some cool activities throughout that first week, and then we'll start classes and get back into rolling, and then we usually start about a month after school with our season. So
now, Casey, with you being on Western, did you grow up rodeoing? I mean, barrel?
Not rodeoing in particular. Okay. But it was a lot of the same, like, horsemanship. That's what I did before I came here, mm-hmm. along with some other events. But it's the AQHA, so American Quarter Horse Association. That's where I competed. American Paint and Horse Association is very similar. And then the reining also has that event in AQHA. And the National Reining Horse Association as well.
Very cool. Awesome.
So I have to kind of piggybacking on the question earlier about the culture shock in Texas. What is the one thing that surprised you most about living down here now?
How nice people were. people are nice in New Jersey, but, you know, they don't hold the door as much. They don't, I mean, everyone just talks to you. And I was definitely not used to that. Like, I go to the cash register at the grocery store and they're just like so cheery and happy. And I just didn't know what to do, but I've gotten used to it.
I thought she was going to say the horses don't speak with a Jersey accent. How you doing? You ready to go for a ride?
No.
Or what? I don't know if Tony Soprano was a horse.
Zach will be here all week, guys, yeah. So be sure to tip your waiters and waitresses. But thank you all so much for joining us. That is Casey Fisher and Alex Desiderio. I got it the first time. I didn't get it the second time today. Desiderio. Alex Desiderio, both national champions with the Texas A&M equestrian team. So that's all we have out from here from the equestrian complex, you know, down Harvey Mitchell, not Welburn.
And you can get here via Welburn. It just takes a
F&B,
little longer.
F&B.
Yes. So that's all we have from here. We'll be back with more on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
All right, welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. We're here.
Okay, just because you're on the show, you know, for 5 minutes doesn't mean you can just, like, start taking it over or something like that.
You're the one who put the mic in my face.
Well, you know what? We are back with My Aggie Nation podcast, and that is KAG's Colin Deaver, TV's Colin Deaver. He's in the studio with us. We're going to talk a little A&M baseball here. They, if we were to bring up this segment, you know, before Tuesday night, we'd be talking about how A&M was on, I believe, like a 6-game winning streak and was really rolling, moved ahead of 500 in SEC play. Robert Cessna, in one of his column blog posts this past week, said they're a team that is looking towards hosting an NCAA tournament regional, which I think is something that we wouldn't have expected at all 2 weeks ago. But then they traveled to Arlington, and then they lost to
Big Mavericks of UTA 3-2.
Big old stinker against the Mavericks. And we were talking a little bit about this off air. You know, I think it's one of those deals that people are way overreacting in the middle of the week. Baseball's the kind of game where anybody can win on any given day. And I know that sounds really cliche, but I think that's most true in baseball because a lot of things can happen. And a lot of things did not go well for the Aggies last night. A pass ball, I think, led to a run. So there's a lot of things that can happen. And the Aggies did not play their best, but they still ended up playing 3-2. So it's a big difference right there. And don't look too much into a loss at UTA, who not a bad team to believe, you know, believe it or not, it's not a bad team. But yeah, I wouldn't look too much into it. By the way, can people hear us?
I think so. Okay. Periscope land, if you can't hear us, let us know.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
This is making for great podcast.
Yes, it is. So anyways, people who are listening on the podcast will have absolutely no idea. But yeah, I don't look too much into it. Take it with a grain of salt. It's all about what you do in SEC play, and they have a chance against a not so hot Tennessee team this weekend. Much like Alabama last weekend, yeah. They have a really good shot at getting a sweep.
Yeah, I mean Tennessee's got four SEC wins. I mean A&M. I know obviously the setback against Arlington, but I think they're gonna get it rolling again in SEC play with Tennessee. And I mean, it's just. This team, they completely turned it around at 0-5 start. Now they're 8-1 SEC play since. So I think that Rob Childress is probably going to look at it the same way we are, as it's just a Tuesday game, and you know, make your mark on the weekends, and they have the last 3 weeks.
The bullpen has been really solid too. It was solid yesterday. You know, all the guys that came in out of the pen did not give up a run, and so I think that's been the biggest part of it. Kaylor Chafin has been. Pretty much a godsend to that bullpen this year so far, anyways. It's been very, very good. Kind of the long guy that they can bring in. And you've got some other guys, too, that are pitching really, really well. So I think that's what's really important.
Turner Larkin's getting the start last night. He's a guy that I have harped on since last season as going to be a really key guy to that rotation as the A&M moves on here to the end of SEC play and most likely in postseason play with the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament. He was huge last year in both of those tournaments as really locking down a lot of those key games, a lot of the big pressure games. And I think he's a guy that will work his way back into the rotation and especially in postseason play.
We'll see. I still see him as a back end of the bullpen kind of guy. I don't know, just with his injury troubles, and I can see Rob Childress maybe not wanting to stretch him, but he continues to put him in the starting role, at least in the midweek. He went 4 innings last night, only gave up 1 earned run, and Rob Childress said that's the best he's looked so far this season. So they're slowly but surely trying to work his way back in. Steven Kolick, I think, has kind of turned a corner, at least of late. You know, a really, really good start to close out the series against Auburn. Was able to pick up a win against Alabama, so he's another guy I think to keep an eye on. That it'll be interesting to see too if Turner Larkins does in fact end up picking things up, if Corbin Martin stays on Saturday start, or if he goes back to the bullpen as a late inning guy. So we'll see about that. I'm not for sure, but the pitching definitely has taken a big step forward.
Yeah, and it's just, it helps Larkins just getting healthy helps their depth, like you said, Zach. And I think if you asked Childress for his honest opinion, I think they probably want Larkins to be starting on the weekends with you know, that either the combination of him and Kolick. I mean, Kolick is pitching so well the last 3 weeks. It's going to be really tough for him to get moved out of that role. I think it's going to be it'll just come down to whoever's pitching better between Corbin Martin and Turner Larkins to see who gets that starting role and who gets moved back to maybe that eighth inning setup man role that Andrew Vinson pitched so well in last year, setting up Kilkenny in the ninth.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Childress ball is definitely Childress ball, and things will look much different come SEC tournament and even postseason time versus right now. But, I mean, we are actually talking about the Aggies in the postseason, whereas before, boy, the outlook did not look very good.
I'm gonna serve up a layup here to Colin, because I know he'll have a lot to say about this, but how about the resurgence of Austin Homan? He's a guy that just started out really poorly to start out the season, to the point where a lot of people were asking and wondering if he should stay in the starting lineup. And as of late, he's been a guy that's been getting the job done.
Yeah, he's got a nice hitting streak going. And one thing, the one thing that Austin has always done is he's always brings his glove with him every single day. Even when he wasn't hitting well, he's always going to field the ball.
I have not once seen him out there without a glove. You're right. he's always got a glove out there.
You always go there.
All right, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, he's always been a good fielder. So he, I mean, that didn't take a back seat when he wasn't hitting well. But yeah, I mean, this kid who went through a lot in the off season. His mother passed away. That's always going to be tough. And Austin, I don't think would ever use that as a crutch. The Aggies aren't letting him use that as a crutch, which is good. But I think it's just a lot on his, you know, it was a lot on his mind. And you know, as a senior, he was, you know, and as the shortstop, I think he came in expecting and putting a lot on himself to do well. And I think he's kind of had a chance to take a step back and just relax and go play ball. And that's exactly what they've needed him to do. And now he's, like you said, he's been playing pretty well.
And that's something else that you said too. You know, baseball is so mental.
90% half mental?
Yeah, pretty much. But I mean, it's a much slower paced game, which allows more time for thought, I think. And a lot of times you'll get in your own head. But as you talked about Austin Holman coming from his mother having passed away back in the fall and trying to work his way, and a lot had been placed on his shoulders, you know, as a senior and as a shortstop, kind of the captain of that team. And right now it looks like he's turned the corner, and so that's always a plus to see.
Here's my question, the kind of way too early prediction type question, two-parter. Does A&M host an SEC regional, and B, does it serve in A&M's best interest if you're an A&M fan and want to see them continue into the SEC or the NCAA tournament? Does it behoove them this season to host an NCAA regional? Go.
Well, yeah, I think it would host them. I think it helps anytime you have that home field advantage, and the Aggies definitely do. It didn't help them against TCU last year, obviously, but they're not going to host a super regional, but a regional. Yeah, I think that's really big, and yeah, it would help them. I mean, they've been good on the road too, but you always want home field advantage.
I think it's gonna be, I think it'll be a little bit tough for them to get to host. They might have to win, maybe not every single series down the stretch, but they're gonna have to win most of it. And their schedule's gonna get really tough. I mean, after Tennessee, they go to Missouri, which isn't too terrible, but then you get Mississippi State at home, then you go Ole Miss, South Carolina, and oh my gosh, I'm blanking on who the last series is that they'll play. But it's going to turn once May rolls around, and I think if they win, you know,
they play Arkansas, by the way,
Arkansas,
yeah, okay,
to end the season. So that's, I mean, they're going to kind of run the gauntlet in the SEC West there to end the season. I think if they win, got six series left. Is that correct? If my math's right. Tennessee, Missouri, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Arkansas.
Five
left. So if they win four out of five of those and then do well in the SEC tournament, I think that they probably play themselves into potentially getting the host. But I mean, I think that's what it's going to take.
Well,
so,
since it's the SEC, I mean, it's the same as it is with football. A lot of people look at the SEC as the cream of the crop in baseball. Whether that's do what?
A little down this year.
Well, no. I agree with you, but I'm just saying automatically people see the SEC conference and they think, okay, well, that is a conference that's worthy of being hosts, is what I'm saying. I mean, they're already, as much as people might not want to believe it, there is bias towards the SEC when it comes to football and baseball.
It's going to be interesting, and the reason I raised that point, it's going to be interesting to see how things shape up. Should A&M win four out of the last five seasons, or really make a case for themselves? Because in years past, it's happened, but you've always seen that it seems to be that the committee is hesitant to grant the state of Texas three regionals, especially when you're looking at a situation like this year when two of the potential three regionals will move on to host super regionals. Now, the reason I also ask, would it behoove A&M to host a regional? If they host a regional, they will most likely be paired with either the Lubbock regional or the Fort Worth regional. And I don't think A&M really wants to play either one of those teams in the super regionals. I think that there would be better super regional matchups out there. And there could even be better regional matches out there. I personally think it might be better for A&M to go be a two seed in another regional somewhere else, and
what, like in Baton Rouge?
In Baton Rouge, I mean, in maybe not. I mean,
you can't go to Baton Rouge.
Yeah, they can't go to Baton Rouge because it's a conference mate. But and that would be another reason why it would push them a little bit further away from the state. But I still think a 2 seed in another region would give them a better shot of making it to Omaha with this team that they have this year.
I really don't know about that. I know if you ask Rob Childress or any of the players, they're going to tell you they want to play at home, and you don't get the same exact feeling in NCAA regional play as you would during the regular season. They have to keep it a little bit more level, which I don't agree with that. If you're good enough to get home field advantage, I think you should have all the perks of being the home team. But that being said, I understand what you're saying. You want to avoid playing Tech. You want to avoid playing TCU or even Baylor if they're able to right the ship towards the end of the season. But, you know, I don't know. I think for A&M, I think their best way to get to that super regional is to be a host.
I mean, if the end goal is getting to Omaha, I don't think this A&M team is getting to Omaha past Tech or TCU with how they've played this year.
So what's A&M supposed to do at this point? I mean, you're just saying that they should somehow play for a 2 seed, or you're just saying
I'm just saying
it would end up being better for A&M to be a 2 seed.
I think it would end up better for A&M being a 2 seed in a region somewhere else. The competition, I mean, if they can go out east a little bit, I mean, the competition is the Big 12 is one of the better conferences in baseball this year.
No doubt. And
so I think you want to get away from the Big 12. You're going to get away from the SEC because they don't match up conference mates like that in the regionals. There's some better options away. You need to get away for this team this year with how it's built to have a chance at making it to Omaha.
Well, I'm just saying Rob Childress and company aren't going to look at it that way. They're going to, you know, win as many games as they can and hope to host a regional. If they do, then yeah, they might end up squaring off with Tech or TCU. But remember, it's a team that, granted, it was in a neutral site, but they beat Tech handedly and almost beat TCU, should have beat TCU in Houston, but the bullpen faltered. And it seems like they've at least fixed that, or at least plugged up some of the holes in the bullpen. So we'll see.
I think probably the best case scenario for A&M is win 4 out of 5 series to end the season, do well in the SEC tournament, and then get to host the regional and then probably get paired up with Texas Tech. Because do they really want to? I don't think A&M wants to get paired up with TCU again for the 3rd year in a row. I would say that TCU probably doesn't want that either, just because that's 3 years in a row playing the same team. That gets a little old, number one. But for A&M, that's a lot of demons. That's a lot of ghosts.
Yeah, but if you're the NCAA tournament and you're the committee and you're looking at who you can pair, it's always been a great series. The past 2 years have been fantastic series between A&M and TCU.
I mean,
so
we've seen national analysts who see a lot of these games say that TCU A&M rivalry is the best one in college baseball right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's one-sided with TCU coming out on top every time, but at this point, if you're the NCAA, why not put them back together? I mean, it makes for great television. It makes for, you know, a great rivalry between two teams in the same state.
So, well, we need to move on a little bit here and talk about Joe Evans Ball Club over across Olson Boulevard. That's the A&M softball team. They're in a little bit different position than the baseball team in that barring a catastrophic downfall here in these last couple of weeks, they should be hosting a regional, and they probably should be hosting a super regional, too. You would think that this is a team that is destined for a national seed. And they have the schedule that should be conducive to do that. But their last really, really big test to kind of jockey things around comes tonight, Wednesday, against the team that knocked them out of the NCAA tournament last year in Louisiana Lafayette. That was a 9-inning barn burner. I believe the final score is 9-8 that ended the Aggie season. So there's a little bit of a revenge factor in this game. It's going to be as good of a midweek game that you could have, say maybe if Texas came to town.
Yeah, it's a big midweek game, but again, it is a midweek game. And at this point in the season, you're looking at conference games. That's where your money is made. That's your bread and butter. I mean, this is a big time game, and I have no doubt that Joe Evans and company want to win this game. But they're not going to risk the weekend series that they'll be playing for this game. I mean, I understand what you're saying. It's kind of a rivalry in the way that they've played. It's very even. Louisiana Lafayette has won 14 out of the 27 times they played, so it's 14 versus 13. A&M wants this win, and pretty much every single player, save for a few, Callie Lanfear being one, Bree Dozier from last year, the seniors that moved on, Alex Mossick, except for those seniors. I mean, a lot of the same players are on this team this year, and they want to get a win, but it's... Don't blow it too far out of proportion. I know that's not fun to talk about because you always want to talk about a big game against...
I kind of disagree because if you look at the rest of their SEC slate, they don't have much chance to really make an impact on the standings, on RPI, on jockeying for this NCAA tournament seeding. This might be their last real chance to put up a good performance and a good resume booster. I think you throw everything you have at this game.
I'm going to disagree with you because they've got Louisiana Lafayette tonight, who's 17. This weekend they've got 22nd ranked Georgia. Following that, they got 20th ranked Kentucky, and then they got 11th ranked Tennessee, who just beat Alabama. So those are their next three series. So those are all big time SEC series, and the SEC is known as the creme de la creme of softball as well. Granted, they're not playing the Auburns, they're not playing the Alabamas, at least in the regular season. Louisiana Lafayette is a big game, but I mean, go back. I think they've already proven themselves worthy with wins over like Florida State. I mean, when they were at that Mary Nutter Classic, that really helped propel them. And I know that was a while back, and the committee has a lot of things to consider. But 37-4, man, 37-4, 11-3 in the SEC, and yeah, they might not have played the best of the best in that conference, but they're still playing some pretty dang good teams, and they still have some big chances. Hosting Georgia this weekend, they'll be heading to Kentucky, going on the road to Lexington. That'll be a big win against the Wildcats, and then hosting a very good Tennessee team right before the SEC tournament. So they've got plenty of chances to prove themselves. If they lose this game, it's not going to be the end of the world, and they're not automatically knocked away from contention of hosting.
No, I certainly wasn't saying that. I just think it could be the difference between a national seed and not. It could help or hinder the difference between a national seed or not, or a more prime matchup come regional time than not.
I don't really think it's going to make a big difference one way or the other. Obviously, a win over a ranked team is big, and getting retribution for last year's loss in the NCAA regional is big, but when it's all said and done, I think what the Aggies do in these next three SEC series is going to be the difference, and in the SEC tournament.
Yeah, I have to agree with Zach. I mean, it's a big game, but I don't think it's like the end all be all. Like if they lose this game, they're not getting a national seed. I think it's going to be if they lose this game and still win the next three series, I think they'll probably lock themselves into a national seed. Now, if they win this game and then lose the next three series against ranked opponents, then you might be talking about them falling out of that national seed. But I think with the baseball thing, it's similar. If they win this and then win two out of three series and then a couple games in the SEC tournament, they're probably locked into a top eight seed. They're locked into hosting a regional.
Yeah.
I mean, that's happening.
But not saying that a win tonight won't hurt. And we'll both be out there. Colin, are you going to be out there too? You're going to be filming some stuff?
I'm
getting some tape.
I'm not working today, technically.
Oh,
I might go out and check it out. But
using the old "I'm not working" excuse to not go do work.
Exactly.
But yeah,
I might go. I like watching the softball.
Yeah,
teams. Just go watch.
Both Travis and me will be out there. And again,
Calling the game?
Yeah. I'll be on Willie 1550 calling the game. Also, go to 12thman.com. You can stream it live. First pitch at 6:30 tonight at the Aggie Softball Complex. Myself and Tim Schnettler will be calling the game. But it'll be a great game. I expect a really good crowd. And as I talked about, a lot of these players who are on this team this year, most of them, 90% of the players who are on the team this year were there last year for that loss. And I know that they want to get some retribution for it.
You know, it's always a Pulitzer-worthy My Aggie Nation podcast when you interview a horse. And that's exactly what we did today for the My Aggie Nation podcast. We also interviewed some great athletes, some great Texas A&M athletes who are national champions in Casey Fisher and Alex Desiderio. And so thanks to them for joining us today.
I just wanted to apologize to Bullseye for calling him Ghost in our interview.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of hard to pronounce Bullseye from now and then, so I want to apologize for that. His name is Bullseye. It is not Ghost the Horse.
Right. Check out the social media for that interview we did with one of the A&M horses from the equestrian team, the real star of that. So thanks to all of those people for joining us this week to give us a little insight on how equestrian works. Also, thanks to TV's Colin Deaver for joining us today and giving his take on some A&M baseball, softball, and some walk-up songs, and also dabbing for us on the podcast as Zach beats him over the head with a mini baseball bat. There's plenty of good Diamond Sports action with Texas A&M this weekend. Check all that out. We're sure to be breaking it down. And also next week we have the NFL draft to preview. We'll be talking Will Miles Garrett go number one overall. Next week on the My Aggie Nation podcast, we'll see you then.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way, the way it must have seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't easy, girl, we know that's true. But if we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. I wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me.